Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. I'm really honored to have on the show some of the people from Cal State LA's music department, and I think it's important to look at some of the different colleges and what they're doing. And tonight we're going to talk about a special festival and competition that is taking place. It just finished yesterday at Cal State LA. It's the, I'm going to see if I can pronounce this right, Gohar and Ovanis Andreasian Guitar Festival and Competition. And as you can see on here, and it's also, there's a picture of this on the that I posted, solo guitar competition, concerts, master classes, guitar ensemble, composition competition, middle and high school guitar ensemble clinics, all sorts of cool things that they're doing. And it's kind of cool to have some of the people involved in this that we're doing this. And then I want to thank Scott Detweiler, who's the one that told me about this and helped putting this together. So it's good to have you back.
Thanks. Good to be back.
And there's several people here I want to introduce, and I'll try to get their names together here too. First over here, Savag Dadurian. He's one of the judges. He's a vocal, your vocal teacher. You set up a department at the, I'm spacing on the church. And I didn't
at
write
the
it
Western Diocese.
Okay, so you, but in as one of the judges, which is kind of interesting because he's coming from a vocal background. It's kind of interesting to judge the guitar stuff. And then also John Kennedy, no relation.
No.
No relation.
None that I know of.
Anyway, he's one of the people, in over one of the faculty members at Cal State LA, and a bass player.
Yes.
And composition, teaches composition over at Cal State LA, and one of the main guys behind this guitar festival.
Yes.
And then also, too, we have one of the winners that's on the from the contest, Garrett Podgorski. So we have him in there, and so welcome to the show, and he's going to play for us a little bit in a minute. Let me play a clip real quick, about a minute or so you can get an idea of the quality and the musicianship, the high bar set by the competition. I'll let Scott explain this one. This, it said the file name is Doris Kosick.
Doris Kosick, yeah. Doris Kosick, she was the second place prize winner for the senior competition, the senior division.
Okay.
She is a guitar player from Slovenia, and she's in her second year at USC in the guitar program.
Oh, okay. So she's over at USC.
Right.
My old haunt.
There you go.
Okay. And Garrett, where are you? At Cal State LA? Or are you?
No, so I'm in high school currently at Village Christian High School.
My God. That's great. That's great. No, no, that's good. You got plenty of years ahead of you to just amaze us. So let me go ahead and play this. This is Doris's piece. It doesn't say on the MP3 what it was. So.
Oh, she's going to be playing Movement of the Bach Lute Suite in C minor, BWV 997, the Fugue.
Okay, so here we go. Let me play a little bit of this for you. This piece goes on for another six. We don't have enough time to play the whole thing, but it's a really a beautiful execution. Let me start out with you, John. Give us a little background how this came to be, this competition, how all of it just evolved to what we to the, this last couple of days.
Right. So this was the fourth edition of the competition, and it was begun by my wife, Satik Andreasian, who's the festival director. It's dedicated to her parents, who were, you know, came to the United States with their families from Iran in the 1970s, and kind of were really interested in, you know, their children pursuing an education. And mm-hmm. So, one of the things that Satik has always wanted to do was to both promote the classical guitar and also promote the education of the classical guitar, the training. So she came up with this idea of having a competition that would focus both on junior level competitors, those up through high school age, and then senior level competitors, those enrolled in a post-secondary program, a music department. And so the first year was one afternoon, basically. People came on campus to Cal State Los Angeles. It was in the choir room, with two or three judges and such. We decided who the winners were, and then about 2 weeks later, we had a grand ceremony. What it's evolved to over the last 4 years is that we've grown to include a composition competition that mm-hmm. encourages professional composers to compose not just for advanced ensembles, but this competition is focused on really an educational perspective mm-hmm. where the composers will go for more of an intermediate level of guitar playing in the ensemble, again, to promote education. We've expanded to having master classes. Last year we had David Tannenbaum from San Francisco Conservatory. This year we had Lito Romero, a member of the Romero's Guitar mm-hmm. Quartet. We've also, in the last 2 years, expanded to having a full day of high school clinics, high school ensemble clinics. Students from the Cortinas Arts High School have participated, mm-hmm. And other arts high schools in the area have come along. And they are basically coached and given feedback from prominent guitarists, both locally and also from around the country. Mm-hmm. And so the competition and festival has really taken off quite a bit. And we have more of a national and international presence. One of the judges came from Norway this year and gave a master class on guitar and composition to my students at Cal State LA. We've had students come from as far as New York, Washington State, San Francisco Conservatory. This year's first prize winner in the senior category came from University of Minnesota. So people are coming from all over the country, specifically the region of Southern California, but also from other parts of the country mm-hmm. to participate. So it's really grown quite a bit. And Satik has done a fantastic job of making this all happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned that you're involving a lot of the high school kids. You're going a little earlier. And let me ask you, do you think that there's a good? I mean, all these players are awesome, but I'm saying from what you're seeing when you see initial auditions and stuff, are you seeing a lot of talent coming out of the high schools?
Seeing an incredible amount of talent. I mean, you're going to hear a product of that talent in a few minutes when Garrett plays. I've been impressed by all of the players, and my colleagues have been impressed by all of the players. But every year, what comes out of it is also the high level of performance and musicianship coming out of early high school and later high school students. Mm-hmm. Really, really quite incredible accomplishment. You know, and sophistication in musicality. It's not just getting through the notes and such. They're making good music and playing complicated pieces, playing pieces by Bach and such, which, you know, adults cry over, and these kids mm-hmm. are playing them beautifully. So it's quite impressive. It really is.
Now, let me ask you, Garrett, because you're in high school. What high school are you in?
Village Christian.
Village Christian?
Yeah.
Where's that located?
Sun Valley, California.
Oh, okay. So you're a local boy. Yeah. I love it. Let me get your mic up a little bit and lean in a little bit when we talk. Let me ask you, have you seen a lot of people your age get involved in more classical guitar? I mean, rock and roll and all that mm-hmm. stuff is pretty much, there's still people that are real into that, but
yeah.
Classical guitar is a very interesting way to go because it's a hard discipline to do, and you've got to really focus, and it's very precise. It's not as it's a lot of hard work, mm-hmm. more than I think, you know, playing rock and blues. But but tell me a little bit. What's your impression of the people of your age? Is there a lot of talent out there?
Yeah, well, there definitely is. I just this last May in 2019, I finished the Parkin International Guitar Competition, and I saw kids from around the world who were playing these high level pieces that. Were competing with me. I placed third, but just to be able to see all these kids who are just playing unbelievably and so dedicated. But also, like, I started with electric guitar. So I picked that up when I was 9 years old, and I played that until I was 15. And then from there, I switched to classical because I found classical more interesting, more difficult. But definitely, the switch from electric to classicals, you need more dedicated to it because there's no amp and distortion to back you up, you know. And I've seen that actually a lot of classical players have gone from electric to classical. Just to develop the left-hand technique is really important.
Right, right.
Because that is an extremely important part of
it. Well, let me ask you, in your rock, what did you listen to?
Oh, I was a huge Aussie fan. Loved Guns N' Roses, Eddie Van Halen.
So it was more of a hard rock, heavy metal. Interesting. Yeah. Which has a lot of classical influences in it, which is interesting.
My teacher was taught by the Aussie guitarist Randy Rhodes. She had a classical.
What's her name?
Janet Robin.
Oh, we've had her on the show.
Oh,
she's
really?
Awesome.
Yeah, no.
Her in the String Revolution, if you've heard them, they're pretty awesome stuff.
No. Yeah, so she was my first teacher, and she kind of developed the electric sense, but also since Randy started playing classical before he passed, she developed a kind of a classical sense as well, and that's what opened my eyes to it. And then I wrote an album when I was 13, and then Parkening reached out to me because my mom sent my album everywhere, and he reached out and said, I want to hear you at a masterclass, or I want you to come to a masterclass and listen. And I came, and I was just, my eyes were open to the classical guitar, and that's when I switched.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I believe ultimately, I've said this before, a lot of people start in rock and stuff. College, jazz was the thing. So everybody was getting into jazz. And then after that, it always goes to classical. Because if your ear develops, you get into more complex harmonies and the way music's written. And ultimately goes that way, which I think is important. Don't give up your electric. I know that most guys stay in classical, they're focused on it. But it's kind of nice because what you've learned on this instrument really benefits you.
Yes,
And as a guitarist, I think we need to be versatile. You got to be able to do everything, and you need to keep the, because it will inspire you. There are stuff, I know guys that are flamenco players that they play heavy metal tunes on flamenco, and it's pretty cool.
Wow.
Ben Woods and Dan Sistos, they do a lot of stuff where they do a lot of, and it's a very, very interesting and creative arrangements, but that's very cool. Mm-hmm. That is really, really cool. I want to ask Savag a question.
Sure.
Now, you're coming from a vocal background.
Yep.
And let me ask you, how do you approach judging that now? From because you're judging a guitar contest.
It's definitely a unique perspective. The biggest thing that I notice is the interpretation, that unique individuality that comes out from each of the performances. And as a vocalist, I pay specific attention to phrasing and expression, the dynamics, that color, using the instrumentation and technique that the guitar player brings out. And there's certainly a lot of great classical repertoire that we commonly share as vocalists and guitarists. And to hear that different perspective that the guitar players bring, it makes me also realize the other interpretive methods that a vocalist can bring as well, and how we can also do better by listening to each other and preparing pieces as duos that mm-hmm. would complement each other. I think it turns out to be like really nice. It's a learning experience, I think, on both ends as well.
So you're looking at, well, similar to what you're doing in voice. So you're looking at color, phrasing, and in most part for the sound.
Yeah.
And interpretation, of course.
And the core technique that the guitarist brings to bring out that beautiful like harmony and the melodies.
Which is interesting because it just goes to show all of those things that you're mentioning, it's common to all instruments. Yeah. And I feel that the universality of the whole thing, we're all coming from the same place. We're using different tools, so to speak. So I think that's very interesting. Looking back, let me direct this to John. Looking back at the 4 years, it's been 4 years now.
Yes.
How much has it changed in terms of the musicianship, the repertoire? And I want to throw this out too. Do you encourage them to do original pieces, or is it basically for the competition they have to do standard?
So I wouldn't say there's any encouragement, but there's no discouragement for them to do their own pieces. However, I would say that this kind of a competition is really a preparation step for larger competitions like the Parkinen or others. And those competitions require standard repertoire. They don't, in fact, we've had a couple of entries this year who wanted to come in and do their own improvisations, which is actually something we saw at the Koblenz Festival 2 years ago when we were there. But the problem with that is that, there's a canon, if you will, of repertoire that's competitive. And so while we don't discourage it, most students are trying to really build on their repertoire for being competitive in these competitions. So I wouldn't say we wouldn't discourage anybody from it. But,
right.
Yeah.
Because that was an issue when I was in school. You had to play.
Right.
Everybody played the same stuff.
Right.
But, to me, the argument is you got to put new blood into it. You got to, and there were some people that were trying to write new pieces, specifically new repertoire for guitar.
Yeah.
New transcriptions and stuff like that. And I was always curious. I think it's good that you encourage it because we need new pieces.
Absolutely. And there was quite a few new pieces in the guitar that we're hearing a lot every year. Not necessarily written by the students and performers performing, but of recent composers and such. And the guitar world themselves has been doing quite a good job at getting as many new pieces mm-hmm. from as many composers as possible. So yeah, there's a good mix, I would say, of the standard repertoire and one or two pieces that keep coming up that are more recent. But as far as the 4 years are concerned, I mean, it really started with a one-day sort of thing. But whether the musicianship has gotten better each year. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've originally was very local, and we have some very good local institutions that produce very good classical guitarists. But now, as we see, first of all, sort of more advanced players from those institutions like USC and Fullerton attend, but also people coming down from the San Francisco Conservatory, which has quite a program. So we have seen the musicianship rise, and also the difficulty level of the pieces, very involved pieces by Giuliani and people like that, and Soar, that we weren't really hearing the first years. We were hearing more of the repertoire, which is challenging, but not as challenging as large scale sonatas and such that that were written in the 19th century and early 20th century.
Now, are you seeing any in the performers? Are you seeing a lot of innovation where they're doing something different that not just in the technique of playing the piece, but maybe approaching it differently or?
Definitely,
you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. Definitely, we see different approaches. Even in the Bach pieces you're going to hear that you've already heard and going to hear later, if you play that clip, you definitely hear different approaches to those pieces. You hear different approaches to some of the classic, more recent pieces like by Leo Brouwer and such. So, you're hearing the influence of an array of teachers really throughout the country and here in Southern California who have their own unique perspective on how these pieces should sound. So you are hearing some of that.
Let me ask Garrett, what do you do to bring to the table to make whatever what you are performing in the show, for example, what do you do to make it unique?
Yeah.
Because everybody's played Bach for years and years and years and years and years. It's been done. How do you make it yours and make it unique to you?
Well, my teacher puts a huge emphasis on musicality, and rather than just playing the notes perfectly, which is a lot of what a lot of young players today do, where they just so focus on the technicality and hitting every single note, but rather they're missing a lot of the musicality aspect. So that is like a huge aspect to me, and using colors in the guitar and really, you know, telling a story through the music is really important, and that's what I've done a lot of to make. You know, you're hearing Garrett Podgorski, you know, you're not just hearing a classical guitarist. So I feel that musicality is like the number one most important aspect of the classical guitar, because it's like a mini orchestra, as Segovia said, because you can create so many colors, tones on it, you know.
But how much freedom do you have in terms of interpreting the piece? Yes, you're using tone, your technique is important, but a lot of teachers are very rigid in how you should play Bach or whatever it is.
Yeah.
How do you find the room to make it yours?
Well, I'm not a player who just goes right off the sheet music. I'll listen to dynamic phrases, and before I start a piece, I'll listen to how for instance, I'll listen to multiple players play Bach, and I'll kind of figure out what I prefer the most. And since Bach obviously is not alive anymore, we couldn't really hear what he would have thought. But, I mean, he obviously has played, there's pieces on the harpsichord and things like that, but I usually listen to someone else play it first to kind of get an idea of what I want it to sound like. And I definitely don't play it right off the page, and I make it my own in that sense. You know, I kind of try to interpret it in a different way to make it mine.
Yeah, if I'm correct, Bach, when he wrote his stuff, it was never played on guitar when he was alive, if I'm correct.
It was played on lute, usually, and these are transcriptions of the lute. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So it's a whole...
Changing it, from the
piano, whole different gig.
Harpsichord, piano, changing it to guitar. Any guitar will sound different, for sure.
So, okay, so you're... it's interesting to see how you kind of make it your own, and I think that's important. Because I've heard a lot of people, like on YouTube, you've heard players play, and there's some amazing players, but some of it's mechanical.
Yes.
So, is there a lot of wiggle room for you to put more emotion in it? Or
yeah, every single piece, if there's no emotion in it, then it's just a robot playing. You know, I'm not going to pay to hear a robot, because obviously technology is advancing today, and that they could have that, but no one's going to pay to hear that. You know, so I find that mechanical playing is like one of the scariest things I think about this generation almost, because a lot of them just, you know, I've heard so many players who are just so focused on hitting every single note, and sure, you played a piece completely perfectly, but I didn't hear any emotion. Artists, like, you need to be an artist when you're playing, you know. And I just find that really, really important.
Well, like what Savag was saying, phrasing, breathing,
breathing with the
way
guitar,
you phrase can change the way we talk when we phrase. Yep. Emphasizing a certain word or whatever changes the whole context of what it is. So, but in your experience too, are you being surprised by some really creative interpretations of some of this material? Are the kids clever, so to speak?
Not as much as I think we'd like to see.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it depends on the player. As they get more advanced and more towards their own professional career, yes, they're taking more chances with the interpretations. So, you know, and it's very true. It's a very valid point about the whole idea of the, you know, the teachers kind of having a specific way with how it should be interpreted. Some competitions, I think, you know, from my experience, the competitions sometimes are very conservative interpretations because you don't want to offend anybody, especially when it comes to things like Bach and some of the really true interpretive puzzles, if you will. But you know, to Garrett's point, I mean, a lot of the judging does count for this musicality, and one of the things that we have in the competition is the People's Choice Award, and that is meant to really get away from the technocratic performances and to look at the innovation, and to look at the poise of the performer, to look at the things that, you know, as Garrett mentioned, you're going to pay to come and see a performer do or hear, to not necessarily sound like the recording you purchased a week ago or something like that. And so we give an award for the one performer in the senior division who kind of is at least attempting to break the mold and to be more progressive. So so we're trying to encourage that through there.
Because, I mean, like, for example, in your case, Garrett, you're still in high school. You're going to be going to college. Mm-hmm. You have more school that you're going to be, more education that you're going to be achieving. But once you get out of school, you're out there. What are you going to do? I mean, if you're going to perform, what's going to make people come and see you? And it's that special, how you interpret, how you play it, that what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
People forget about that because, yes, it's important to play Bach like Bach should be played. But at the same point, what are you going to do? A lot of classical musicians became famous showmen that were actually accomplished, you know, in keyboards, guitar, whatever. They made it a show. It's also entertainment, you know, and it's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
It's true.
It is, yeah.
And you have to look at it. But the... So you're seeing a little more of that, not as much as you were saying in terms of the creativeness, but it's good to see that it's the showmanship. Now, you're talking about the performance and this stuff, but what about the showmanship?
Yeah, showmanship, I wouldn't say we see a lot of that. I wouldn't say we've been seeing a lot of that at all, and I'm not sure why. In my opinion, and you know, not being a classical guitarist, but certainly have been around it for the better part of 30 years, it's a little hard to be as showy on the classical guitar as some of the other instruments, because you know you're literally hugging the instrument as a classical, and so like where a violin player can kind of throw their bow up, or you know, you can see pianists kind of swooning as they play and such. It's a little more difficult to do that with the guitar. The guitar is more of an intimate approach, I think, to music, and so that kind of creates a different approach, I think. But you know, we have seen some flash, especially recently. You know, because again, these students eventually going to be professionals, want to make their mark and be attractive to audiences,
right,
and attractive to you know, managers and such. So
I mean, I understand as students, you're studying, so it's always like the task at hand.
Yeah.
So the focus tends to be that. But and it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to get up, jump around, do backflips and stuff while you're playing. But just, you know, just smiling, looking out at the audience.
Yeah.
A lot of students always look at what they're playing, where you actually engage the audience. I mean, I think that's something that needs to be shown, because it's too self-centered. You're just like, oh, here, I'm going to just sit here and play.
Yeah.
You need to project it out, whatever you're doing.
You know, one of my favorite classical guitarists is Sharon Isbin.
And
she's able to do that. She's able to project the intimacy of the guitar, but she's also able to engage the audience by, instead of looking at the guitar passionately, she tends to look to the side, look to the audience, and almost say, you know, come here, enjoy this with me.
Because she's opening it up.
She's opening it up, yeah. And we do see a lot in the competition of students being very, you know, kind of into the instrument themselves, but again, they're students, they're young,
that's to be taken into account.
Exactly.
I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
But your background too, from as a bass player, you were a performer. You've been playing.
Yeah.
You were a gigging musician.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
You get it, and then you as a singer, you get it too, because you perform.
Right. Yeah.
So there's a difference than just playing the music and doing a show, so to speak.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's important to project, especially these days. You know, it's a different era too than even when we were in school. I mean, with YouTube and students can just record themselves and share it and such, and often you have to engage visually as well as sonically.
So right.
Definitely.
You know. No, that's true. Yeah. That's true. The let me ask you in terms of your as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about you teach composition, but you don't teach bass.
I don't teach bass. No,
okay.
No. I do ensemble coaching and such. I don't do individual instruction on the instrument.
Okay. So now as a in composition,
mm-hmm.
what do you bring to the table besides, the obvious curriculum, but for the student from your experience, what's important out there in the real world?
Well, I think what's important for both composers and performers is to allow the student to experience as much of what's out there as possible and have it manifest in their work, either as a performer or a composer. I was trained by teachers who would tell us these horror stories of they would be in grad school and they had to write music a certain way. And this was in the 1960s. Everyone who was getting a doctorate in composition had to write 12-tone rows or they'd be thrown out of the department. They would just talk about how horrible that was. And the beauty of being a composer and a performer in our current day is that there is so much music out there to be that can be performed and can be inspire a composer. And so in my teaching, whether it's coaching an ensemble or teaching composition, it's to create an environment where students feel relaxed to create with the kind of styles and the kind of interpretations that they experience in their day-to-day lives as musicians. You know, mm-hmm. not to tie their hands behind their back, so mm-hmm. to speak, by saying, oh, it must be this way. And that's something that I wish we would see more in the guitar competition in general. More of that, maybe take a chance on this Bach movement as opposed to, or maybe start to play pieces that are maybe involved with being transcriptions of oud performances from the Middle East, things like this, because that's all out there right now. Because of the curriculum, because of the conservatory methods and such, it's harder and harder to get those kinds of things into the curriculum. But my approach to teaching is generally to be open to all music and find your voice through that openness, to combine as many of the things you like into your own singular voice. It's not as easy as telling everybody you must compose this way.
Yeah.
But it certainly is. It's more practical and it gives the students the opportunity to branch out and be able to do more things when they're in their professional
yeah.
life.
No, for example, I think, Scott, you've seen this too, but some friends of mine that were on the show, the California Guitar Trio, they studied under Robert Fripp from King Crimson.
Wow.
And he uses a whole different tuning.
Yeah,
and it's amazing what it does. It's like all fifths. It doesn't have the change from the G string to the B string. And it does, it makes the guitar sound much fuller. And there's like five of the they do three, like circle, like pointillism. Mm-hmm. One will play one note, one will play the other note, one will play the other one. And they go round and round. And it just sounds like a super sustaining guitar, one guitar. It's a very fascinating sound.
Wow.
But the thing is they're developing these new tunings, and I'm finding in more conventional music a lot of radical slack key type of tunings where they're doing different things or using capos and developing new tonalities and stuff that you never heard before on guitar. So that's just one aspect of it that you're seeing in terms physically that's being exposed. But like you said, the different different types of music that you're hearing all over the world now, it's such a global thing.
And in fact, a recital I heard quite a while ago, actually, with Bill Kannengeiser, he played a piece, I can't remember the composer's name, but it's a composer that he plays quite often. And actually, he tuned the open strings to basically C minor, C sharp minor.
Koyan Baba.
What is it?
Koyan Baba.
Okay, there it is, yeah. And it was wonderful. But what he had to do to actually, to get the tuning done in the middle of a recital, he had to kind of, he had to tell an entertaining story while he's retuning the entire guitar. And then I think there was intermission, so you could go and retune.
I never understood that. Yeah. The rock and roll mentality is you have a guitar tune that way, so they just bring it out and you do it.
Yeah.
But the guitar quartet, the LA Guitar Quartet you're talking about too, they did a lot of stuff for prepared guitar where they put little things on the strings to get weird sounds.
Right.
Very cool stuff. But I mean, all of this stuff didn't exist when I was in school. You didn't really hear much of this.
Right.
And it is opening it up. And I mean, just changing subtle differences in the tuning of the guitar, just classical guitar, probably the most common thing is lowering the E string down to D.
Right, drop D, that's about it.
Right, but I mean, it's just amazing. When you start playing around with that, it's a whole other world. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out those standard fingering, but these guys are like doing amazing stuff with these totally radical tunings, and it is interesting to see, and it's an exciting time, I think.
Oh, it's very exciting. It's exciting.
Are you seeing in the department too? In your department, are you seeing it more being music being more in a melting pot type of thing, like I experienced in the '60s, where everybody was kind of borrowing and mixing styles and stuff, whereas like in the 70s and 80s, it became a little more stricter. I didn't see as much experimentation.
Well, the melting pot, you know, I don't know if that's experimentation necessarily, but I think in our department exclusively at Cal State LA, there's a lot of openness to other styles and across the board curriculum. We have an outstanding commercial music department. We have the only master's degree in Afro-Latin music.
Wow.
And next year we'll be starting a minor in music called Creative Studies in Music, which incorporates a curriculum of composition, jazz improvisation, sort of a world music, applied world music styles, and technology that where you incorporate your acoustic instrument with effects pedals and such and computer. So there is a sort of a in our department, there's a healthy appetite for the balance between the traditional canon, which is required by more schools than just our department. So if students want to progress, they still have to know the canon. Mm-hmm. But if students also want to have an opportunity to, again, be part of this fertile environment of all these styles, they're able to also explore other styles and other approaches through these other programs that we have in our department.
Because I'm seeing, like, in some of the professional musicians, there's a, I call them neoclassical, neo-flamenco thing, where a lot of these guys with, like Ben Woods, heavy background in heavy metal, in rock, strictly rock, they came from that. So their influences, they're getting that. And they're coming in, they're just playing amazing things and melding, borrowing from jazz, borrowing from Middle Eastern music. My friends Incendio, where they use a lot of world fusion.
Yeah.
Is the new name.
Yeah.
And they're incorporating all this stuff in it. It's fascinating stuff where they're doing it all on flamenco and classical guitars, but they're doing some really cool things harmonically for the year and exposing people to scales that weren't common that much, or you don't hear as much, but it's very, you know, in Middle Eastern and in Oriental music.
Exactly.
And stuff like that. So, but let me ask Savag, I got a question for you.
Sure.
You set up the American Sacred Music Project?
The Armenian Sacred Music Project.
Armenian. Okay, I misspelled it again.
That's okay.
That's all right. I'm just blind as a bat. Okay, but anyway, let's talk a little bit about that. I want to get a little more so people understand your background and stuff and talk about that. I presume, is that a very traditional style or a very precise style, or is there a lot of openness in it? Interpretation vocally?
Well, for the last 4 years, I've been the sacred music director at the Western Diocese in Burbank. And during my time as director, I noticed that as I traveled through all the different parishes and community organizations as well, there was a need for like a comprehensive library that would not only have all this music, but all the corresponding melodies that stem from the church. So I began a personal project to collect and then do digital engravings of all these hymns and then distribute them and have them readily accessible. As the first, you know, the Armenian church was the first Christian nation and adopted religion, we have so many hymns going all the way back to the formation, and the preservation of those hymns are crucial, especially now, and having a digital platform allows us to incorporate them through a worldwide means and no longer in mm-hmm. a physical stored manner in some library.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
so you're which is good. It's very important to preserve and preserve the legacy. All that music is very important. But do you find that the choirs, are they branching out? Are they pushing the limits and the boundaries?
I wholeheartedly support it. During my tenure, I made sure to work with other religious organizations and community organizations to bridge that gap. I mean, at the end of the day, we're in choirs, we're all singers, so we should all collaborate. And we've worked with many Valley churches, with Valley Beth Shalom and Catholic churches, and done repertoire together. And then worked with community organizations as well to bring out that oneness and then introduce the differentiations, you know, especially with Armenian music. It stems from the Middle East, which, you know, there's different pneumatic scales, but very similar to sister cultures. And it's important to display that, you know, we're all in this together. So we have different like iterations, but it all comes from that same roots of like the love of our music.
Yeah. Well, the heritage is important, but it's also, yeah, it does stretch the ear. You're seeing a lot more Middle Eastern influences in today, even in film composing and stuff like that. You're seeing more of that, which is exciting. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And it's good to bring that into the table.
It's
so,
very interesting.
Do you think there'll ever be a vocal contest in this?
Probably not. Sorry, Sevan. Yeah, the focus is really on the classical guitar.
On the classical
there won't
guitar.
I one time, you know, using my old Led Zeppelin days, tried to convince Satik maybe we could have electric guitar in there, and that was a rough week when I tried that one.
No jazz.
No jazz. No. It's gonna be classical guitar.
Yeah. Well, if I may, one of the things I think that we might be missing here, because Satik is not here, is the fact of all the women
that
are playing guitar now, and
that's true
at the competition. And this year there was a women's forum. John, you wanna about the women?
Well, so you know, again, going on the expanding theme, Satik decided that there should be a forum on women in the guitar. In the classical guitar world, and she put together an amazing panel. She brought in Andrea Ricci Cannon from Texas, who is an educator and a performer, and has a dual background, both classical music and jazz and rock. She brought in Connie Hsu, who's mm-hmm. also a classical soloist and teacher, has a USC background and such. She also brought in this wonderful luthier, Monica Esparza, who was one of the first luthiers in Spain, who was a woman and invited to have a bench with a major luthier, and it was a wonderful discussion about the challenges of, you know, basically being a woman in the classical guitar scene, but also it was a very positive discussion on how things are turning around and how they're you know, they're actually at the forefront of turning this around and getting more and more women involved. And I'm glad to say that, especially in the junior division, we had quite a number of young girls who are competing, and it did quite well in the competition. Also in the categories of the guitar ensembles on Friday, I mean, I would say that some of the ensembles were almost half and half young girls.
So it's almost 50%,
yeah,
which is good.
Over the next generation, I think it's going to even out. And you know, plus one of the best guitarists around is Sharon Isbin. You know, and that's been, I think, helpful to young women who want to go into the field.
Yeah, Sharon and Leona Boyd.
Leona Boyd, yeah, exactly.
And it's even here on the show. You'd be surprised the percentage of some amazing guitar players that are women. To me, it's the whole point of it is it's not gender based. It's you're a good musician or not. It doesn't matter what your gender is.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's good. So you're getting, the numbers are coming up. Are you seeing with players, contemporaries of yours in school, seeing a lot of women playing?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple that I know personally who are just soaring. And it's just, there's, back, I wasn't around back then, but I've heard back then that it was so much more difficult for women to pick up a guitar and try to, you know, pursue that because all the metal bands had just a bunch of guys.
Well, in terms of rock, but I mean, even when I was in school, there was one girl that was, I think we had one that I heard of that was there. I didn't have any classes with her, but it wasn't a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it was predominantly guys, but that's good. Nowadays
it's definitely
even. And what are you seeing in school? What's the percentage, do you think, in terms, in your department, composition? Is it half and half, or is it less?
Well, actually, it's not half and half. For whatever reason, we only have a couple of women in the composition department, but we have a good number of women in the department, department-wide. And, you know, I'm really never really sure why that is, honestly, because I think that there's a lot of opportunity for everybody, you know, to be involved in composition and getting their advanced training in music. So,
well, like in film scoring, there's a lot of women now that
there's
are doing
quite a
it,
few.
You know, that are involved in the big features.
Right.
So it's important. It is is something that's definitely very viable. But that's interesting. No, that's compass. And that you were talking about the woman that's a luthier. Pretty much all of the people, there's only a few guys I know. There are a lot of good guitar repair guys and techs, but most of them I know are women that they've worked on my guitars. It's amazing.
Interesting.
And it wasn't consciously picking a woman to work
on.
It's just that she knew what I needed to have done.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. So it is a changing world in that sense. And now vocals, it's pretty much always been both.
Good balance.
Yeah, it's good balance, but I don't think that in general the musicianship, I think, is it's now it doesn't matter, which is an exciting time.
Yeah,
well, I don't think it ever really mattered.
True.
The musicianship was high regardless. It was opportunity, and there's just simply more opportunity now for everyone to get in there. And again, it's having an open mind. You know. Some of the stories that came from some of these players and that were on the panel, it was shocking that it was, you know, in this century, the stories they were telling of, you know, oh, you know, you're a woman, you can't really play the guitar, right, or something like this, and you know, and it was really shocking to hear those stories. I would expect to hear them back, you know, in the 40s.
Well, think about it. I think, was it 70 years ago? When's the 30s or the 40s?
Yeah.
Women didn't vote.
Well, that's true. Yeah,
that's kind of weird.
It is kind of weird.
I mean, thinking about it, it's like you just assume. I mean,
and I think they needed to have their husband's permission to open a bank account up until like the 60s, I heard.
Really?
Or to get a credit card, something, things like that. That they needed the husband to co-sign.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
We're out of time. I told you guys it would fly really fast.
We're out of time,
but I want to give enough time for Garrett to play something for us. Go ahead and give information real quick. I'm going to have you guys just go around the room. Information on for next year's and also your curriculum in terms of approaching for the composition department.
Well, I mean, primarily the Guitar Festival. We're planning for the fifth competition next year. There's already been a lot of discussion about that, and the best way to keep up with the guitar competition is through our website. We're sponsored through Cal State LA, so it's www.calstatela.edu/Andreasian-competition. And that's the easiest way to get to the information as it starts to get posted. About April, we'll start posting information and such. And, you know, just really quickly, I want to acknowledge so many of our sponsors. It includes Guitar Salon International Foundation, Guitar Salon International, Ardashes Dadarian, who does so much of the printing for us, AMI Guitars, Cordoba, La Bella Strings, and Yamaha have all been wonderful in helping us with awards and such. And so many of we're building a good base of private donors. And if anyone's interested in supporting the competition, again, to get a hold of us through our website. And it's a good program. It's worth supporting.
Yes, definitely. And anything you're doing? Come on, you're a gigging musician. Come on.
Well, I'm trying. the last few months doing this competition, I kind of forgot how to compose. So I'm hoping tomorrow morning I'll remember how to compose. Okay. But I'm working on a couple of chamber
pieces. But are we going to see a little more bass playing out of
Yeah, it? Yeah. I'm actually promoting a piece of a friend of mine, William Roper. He's done some graphic scores based on growing up as an African American in Los Angeles. And I've been working on those scores, and I'm hoping to do some performances mm-hmm. in the next few months. Yeah.
Savag, what are you doing?
I'm working on this sacred music project, if I just can add about the next year's clinic ensemble, for those in the educational industry, it's important to promote music education in your classrooms, and we look forward to hosting more local and regional high schools to attend our clinic sessions mm-hmm. at the 2020 festival.
So how can they get a hold of you for that?
If they go to the Cal State LA website, Cal State LA. They can find my contact info as well as Satik and John's information
okay.
as well.
Very cool. Scott, what are you up to?
I'm going to be helping. I'm on the board of directors for the festival, so I'll be working through the year with that. I'm working on a new album, and I'm going to be with Guitars in the Classroom starting in January teaching blues in South Central Los Angeles. So I'm
very,
really excited
very,
about
that's
that.
That's very, very cool. That sounds good. Now, I left him last but not least, Garrett, and I think this is important. Being a high school student, he has his own website, which is smart because he needs to be on social media. Mm-hmm. Give him the information, and what are you up to?
Yeah, well, I'll just give you my Instagram. It's Garrett Podgorski Music, just my name and then music at the end. And from there, you can find all my other platforms. But I'll be releasing an album by the end of the school year. So around May, I'm going to have a Villalobos album, which
oh,
I'm really
very
excited
cool.
about. I'm going to have the Five Preludes and a couple other pieces in there. And then I'm also just getting ready for college. I'm hoping to be attending Pepperdine University with Christopher Parkening. So,
very
yeah,
cool.
Just a lot of other sessions. And stuff.
Now, before you explain the piece that you're going to take us out with, tell me about this guitar. I
yeah.
have to talk about the guitar.
So this yeah. is a 1968 Jose Ramirez. It was built by the CLL. That's just the stamp inside. And I found this on Reverb.com. And I ordered it. I've been looking for a guitar for Ramirez. I had been looking for one for a while. And I finally found this one. And it's one of the most beautiful instruments I've ever played. And I've had it refinished a couple times by Fred Wallachy in Malibu.
Did it mess the sound?
No, it actually made it better. So he,
very cool.
He's Christopher Parkening's main repair guy, and he just, we've refinished it. A lot of these scratches, they used to be scratches, and now they're kind of covered up, but it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's, if I'm correct, it's a cedar top and
yeah.
rosewood.
Rosewood.
With a mahogany neck and ebony fretboard.
Exactly.
Okay, tell us a little bit about the piece you're going to play right now to take
yeah.
us out.
Yeah, so I'm going to play a super difficult piece. It's called the Studio Brillante. It's a famous study by Francisco Torrega. It's study in A major, but it's commonly performed because of the musicianship that can be expressed through the playing.
Okay, everybody, I'm going to let him take us out. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week, and have a good week. But here, let's have Garrett take us out here. Mm-hmm.